Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing over 1 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition and stewardship of Florida public conservation lands, including programs like Florida Forever, Everglades Restoration, and more. The Florida Wildlife Federation. More information online at fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
An anemic $129 million tax cut package is ready for a vote in the Senate after a last-minute meeting today. That measure bearing little resemblance to Governor Rick Scott's $1 billion goal, and lawmakers say the support just isn't there.
Too many of them do not believe there's any bang for the buck. They think this is more of a marketing program than it is a real job creator.
Also tonight, over the objections of some, the Florida House is moving forward with a sweeping set of new abortion clinic restrictions.
I'm weary of all the ways this body has tried to limit and restrict legal abortion.
We'll also hear about some more constitutional amendments facing Florida voters and hear about changes to the state's divorce and alimony statutes. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Florida lawmakers dealt another blow to Governor Rick Scott's budget priorities today. Kate Payne reports a scaled-back tax package is now ready for a full vote by the Senate.
With the end of session looming, the Senate Appropriations Committee pushed through a last round of bills Thursday. At the top of the list is a $129 million tax cut package, a fraction of Governor Rick Scott's $1 billion goal. The measure would permanently eliminate the sales tax for manufacturing equipment, and it also includes special breaks for aviation fuel, veterans groups, and pear cider. The popular back-to-school tax holiday also made the cut, although it will be trimmed from 10 days to 3. Nonetheless, Senator Dorothy Huckel of Port Orange stands behind the bill.
This is a good bill. This provides substantial tax relief to our citizens, and along with what we're going to do on the required local effort.
The tax package also carries a last-minute amendment by Senator Don Gates of Destin. The controversial amendment would allow three panhandle counties to use tourist development tax dollars for public safety instead of marketing.
These are, with respect to three different counties, local dollars collected locally, used locally for local purposes, with the local hospitality industry having to sign off on their use. That is the bill.
The measure would let Walton, Okaloosa, and Bay County use funds for police and lifeguards for spring breakers. Gates filed the contentious amendment mere minutes ahead of the 8 a.m. meeting, fanning the flames of his longtime feud with Senator Jack Latvala of Clearwater.
And I just doubt seriously that you, in good conscience, can say that this is a transparent way of doing business to bring amendment into a committee 9 minutes before the committee meeting.
Members of the hospitality industry strongly oppose the bill, and Senator Huckel says the measure is out of bounds.
You know, the statute is very clear on what the authorized uses are for tax development funds, and that's to promote tourism. It's very specific in the statute. That statute was adopted for specific reasons and not for things like, and I'm not denigrating it, but not for things like lifeguards and paying salaries, et cetera, et cetera.
The Senate's anemic tax package is but a shadow of Governor Rick Scott's longtime priority. With $400 million in tax cuts offered this year and $450 million last year, the total lands well below Scott's two-year goal of $1 billion. Senate Appropriations Chair Tom Lee of Brandon says too many lawmakers are philosophically opposed to Scott's plan.
I think it's more of an ideological problem. It's not about the money, I don't think. It's, and I've had enough conversation with enough of my colleagues to get a pulse of their perspective that They just don't, there's too many of them do not believe there's any bang for the buck. They think this is more of a marketing program than it is a real job creator.
With his top priorities falling by the wayside, some say the governor could get heavy-handed with the veto pen. Still, Chair Lee says they did the best they could.
He's going to be the governor for the next 2 years. We're going to work with him for the next 2 years. And some years that goes better than others. We did everything we could to try to get him as far close to what we could as possible. He's our friend. He's our governor. And to the extent that he's disappointed, we're disappointed.
Lawmakers have until March 8th to finalize budget negotiations ahead of the end of session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
This week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard a case challenging a Texas law that requires abortion providers have admitting privileges to hospitals. Meanwhile, Nick Evans reports similar legislation is marching through the Florida Capitol.
Monday this week, Senate lawmakers sent a package of new abortion clinic regulations to the floor.
Nothing in this bill, as I've said before, is removing a woman's right to choose. We're just making sure that if she does make that choice, that the facility that she goes to has the same level of required care as we required other similar facilities.
That's the bill's sponsor, Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell. Wednesday in the House, Representative Colleen Burton, like Stargell, a Republican from Lakeland, introduced the companion measure.
The bill requires all physicians who perform abortions in a clinic prior to the third trimester to have admitting privileges with a hospital within a reasonable proximity of the clinic, unless the clinic has a written transfer agreement with a hospital within a reasonable proximity to the clinic.
Pro-choice advocates call legislation like this a trap bill, or targeted regulation of abortion providers. The trap tactic drawing the most criticism recently has to do with hospital admitting privileges. A Texas law carrying those provisions wound up in the U.S. Supreme Court this week, and similar language is part of Stargell and Burton's bill. Wednesday, Burton argued the inclusion of a transfer agreement sets their bill apart. But Stargell and Burton go further than just requiring a relationship with a hospital.
The bill prohibits public funding for an organization that owns, operates, or is affiliated with a licensed abortion clinic and provides exceptions to this.
State health officials will actually have to apply for a waiver from the federal government to move forward with that provision. Aventura Democratic Representative Joe Geller took Burton to task over the idea on the House floor.
Would this bill prohibit any payments of any kind to Planned Parenthood?
Representative Burton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this point in time today, since Planned Parenthood is an organization that is affiliated with abortions right now, with some exceptions that are in the legislation, it would.
Geller pushed Burton on the reason why organizations like Planned Parenthood should be completely defunded.
What is the purpose of saying if the organization over here is engaged in providing legal abortions, why would we ban it over here from receiving reimbursement for completely unobjectionable services like pap smears or breast cancer screening?
Instead of responding directly, Burton argued against using taxpayer money to pay for abortions, but didn't address why her measure cuts funds for other services.
This bill clearly would be considered a pro-life bill. It's presented to you by a pro-life member of the Florida House of Legislation. So I believe that tax dollars should not be spent on abortions. I'm the sponsor of the bill, and I'm asking the members of this House to make that decision also.
Later, Minority Leader Mark Pafford asked House members to put their money where their mouth is.
I'm weary of all the ways this body has tried to limit and restrict legal abortion. I support legal abortion and a woman's right to choose her own reproductive decisions. Eliminating the constitutional rights of Floridians should not be done piecemeal. It should not be done incrementally. This amendment is simple. It gives this body the chance to vote on legal abortion. A yes vote bans legal abortion. A no vote preserves legal abortion.
Pafford was prepared to vote against his own proposal, which other lawmakers quickly negated with a further amendment. It seems an outright ban is a bridge too far for all but a handful of lawmakers. Even if it weren't, such a proposal would likely find itself tied up in the courts immediately. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
The Florida Senate today did not take another shot at reviving a measure that would have allowed people with concealed weapons licenses to openly carry guns in public places. The sponsor, Don Gates, Republican of Niceville, had proposed attaching the proposal onto a separate bill that aims to lift a ban on the manufacturing or sales of a maritime tool known as a slingshot. That tool, by the way, was once a 19th century gang weapon, but Gates withdrew his amendment because of a Senate rule that bars lawmakers on the Senate floor from tacking language from a bill that is stalled in the committee process onto a separate bill. The open carry measure, approved a month ago in the House by a mostly party line 80-38 vote, did not get through the Senate Judiciary Committee. The slingshot measure will go before the Senate for a final vote on its own tomorrow. The House has unanimously approved the slingshot measure. Still to come on Capitol Report, ready to vote on Florida constitutional amendments about energy? Looks like you'll have several, and opponents are calling one of them an attack on the free market when it comes to who can produce and sell the power.
So for a legislature that's very big on promoting things for industry, it's perhaps a tad inconsistent.
A couple of criminal justice-related bills appear stalled this year, including sentencing reform.
But I'm sure that the bill will come back in years to come because the voters speak every 2 years.
And while some are raising concerns about the impact alimony changes could have on low-income Floridians, the bill's supporters say in the end, it's up to the judge.
I would hope that a judge would say, that's not significant, that's not, and we're not going to change your alimony award. Nothing in the bill says that the judge has to change the award.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
The Senate Appropriations Committee agreed today to put a clean energy amendment on the ballot, increasing the likelihood voters will be scratching their heads when they go to the polls later this year. Republican Jeff Brandis of St. Petersburg wants to use tax breaks to promote solar energy and geothermal power, and Jim Ash reports environmentalists are giving qualified support.
First came the environmentalists and Tea Party activists with their ballot initiative. Floridians for Solar Choice wants to make it legal for small-scale solar generators to sell electricity. Then came the monopoly utilities and their similar-sounding Consumers for Smart Solar. Other than provide a vehicle to attack the environmentalists, their amendment does little. On Thursday, Brandis stepped to the plate with the latest version of a constitutional amendment. It's hardly bumper sticker friendly.
First, it provides flexibility for the legislature to establish the conditions, limitations, and definitions that would be applicable to the tax exemption proposed by this ballot initiative.
Floridians for Solar Choice, the first group, won't make the November ballot. Backers hope to raise enough signatures for 2018. Consumers for Smart Solar has more than enough signatures for November, but it's waiting for the Florida Supreme Court to give its okay. Environmentalists hope the Florida justices strike down the utility-backed amendment, but Susan Glickman, a lobbyist for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, supports the Brandis proposal because it provides tax breaks that would encourage the use of more solar energy.
If we build all the new natural gas plants that the big major monopoly utilities have in their 10-year site plan, we'll be up to 89% relying on gas. So not only will the solar save people money, it will also help us diversify our energy mix in Florida, which is really critical.
Brandis's amendment would give businesses the same property tax breaks that homeowners get for installing solar. It would also lift intangible taxes on the equipment, and that's an important step. Intangible taxes have kept large companies like SolarCity out of the Florida market. Experts say they add up to 5 cents per kilowatt hour for solar energy, making it impractical. In a recent interview, Brandis says he's been working with the industry.
Exactly what they've told us they need. They say, look, we need to get to be able to lease these products without this additional tax burden on top of us.
But environmentalists are upset by two last-minute changes to the legislative proposal. One moves the amendment from the November general election to the August primary, when far fewer voters go to the polls. Sierra Club lobbyist David Cullen says the second change would put off the benefits of the amendment indefinitely.
The other issue is that they have reduced the bill's impact from requiring that there not be real estate taxes on solar and renewable energy source devices to allowing it and making it permissive conditioned on laws passed by the legislature.
Leaving it up to the legislature to implement the amendment hasn't always worked out well for solar incentives, Cullen points out. Voters approved property tax relief for homeowners who install solar in 2008. The legislature implemented them 5 years later.
So for a legislature that's very big on promoting things for industry, it's perhaps a tad inconsistent.
Brandis's proposal is headed next for the Senate floor. A House companion is also lined up for a floor debate. Since they're joint resolutions, Governor Rick Scott doesn't get to weigh in. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
As a number of criminal justice issues continue to move in the Florida legislature, others may be dead this session. As Sasha Cordner reports, that includes a Senate effort to build on past prison reforms.
The Senate Criminal Justice Committee, led by Baker Republican Greg Evers, drafted and approved a proposal that included a series of prison reforms. The Florida Department of Corrections had come under scrutiny for inmate deaths, allegations of abuse by prison guards, and cover-ups. So last year, the House and Senate tried and failed to pass a comprehensive prison reform package to address those concerns. Governor Rick Scott later included parts of the bill in two executive orders. They included ways to address use of force incidents, additional training, and surprise inspections. Now Evers wants to build on those reforms. This year's bill includes monitoring elderly offenders and making it a third-degree felony for a corrections officer to intentionally harm an inmate. Back in October, that latter provision faced some resistance from Florida Department of Corrections Secretary Julie Jones.
Because there's already felony provisions in law for any type of battery. And singling out corrections officers for an additional charge, I think, isn't necessary. But we'll work with the committee.
Another provision that concerns some lawmakers and stakeholders impacts a current law requiring inmates to serve at least 85% of their sentence before they're eligible for parole. Under the bill, an inmate could serve less than 85% of their sentence if they met certain educational goals. While that bill passed the committee unanimously about a month ago, it doesn't have a House companion. That was also the bill's first hearing, and it's never come up in its two remaining committees. A similar bill by that same committee has also had one hearing. It allows the courts to depart from the minimum mandatory sentences for certain offenders. It would also allow certain nonviolent offenders to serve 65% of their sentence instead of the 85% rule. A staff analysis says that could reduce Florida's prisoner population by close to 7,800 inmates over a five-year period and save the state nearly $1 billion. Florida Families Against Mandatory Minimums, the state's public defenders and criminal defense attorneys are for it. The state attorneys and the Florida sheriffs are against it. Matt Dunnigan with the Florida Sheriffs Association says the current law allowing offenders to leave after serving 85% of their sentence for good behavior is fine.
Right now, they can get out at 85% instead of serving the full 100%. We believe at 85%, that is the threshold. That's what we've had here for many decades.
And before it passed his committee unanimously, Evers acknowledged that this could be it for the bill this year.
The people are telling us they want us to think smarter because they do feel safe, but they want us to think smarter about how we incarcerate people here in the state of Florida. They want us to follow other states and think outside the box. This bill, this may be the last committee that this bill sees this year. But I'm sure that the bill will come back in years to come because the voters speak every 2 years.
Meanwhile, Prison Chief Julie Jones hasn't weighed in on that bill.
Because I'm at the very end of the judicial process, so they come to me after all of those policy decisions are made.
But she says there are a few others on her radar.
Like the department's bill for alternative sentencing and changes in probation violation.
Jones also likes a bill by Jacksonville Republican Representative Charles McBurney, the House Judiciary Committee chairman.
Representative McBurney's bill that looks at
drug courts, mental health courts, veterans courts, is going to influence how we treat an individual in community and keep them under supervision. I don't mind supervising them in community because it's far cheaper than getting them behind the fence and supervising them. So that's where I'm pushing, is hoping that decision makers are trying to work at the community level before they come to prison to stabilize my prison population. I think we're going to get there.
Meanwhile, a legislative aide to Ever says they're hoping to add aspects of both committee bills onto other bills in the Senate as well as the House, but he says it doesn't appear that there is an appetite for it. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
The children of legal immigrants to the U.S. and Florida would become immediately eligible for the state's KidCare program. KidCare offers subsidized health care to low-income families, and as Lynn Hatter reports, expansion of the program has been several years in the making.
Several years ago, the federal government removed a 5-year waiting period for immigrant kids to get federally subsidized health insurance. Now, years later, Florida is a step closer to doing the same. The Florida House of Representatives has approved a bill by Miami Republican Representative Jose Felix Diaz.
We started off estimating that it would support a few thousand kids. Now we're at 17,000 kids. It can increase depending on the amount of kids that apply. It could be an unbelievable thing for the children of the state of Florida.
Miami lawmakers have spearheaded the effort for years, but it's previously run into opposition due to anti-immigrant sentiment. Another barrier for the bill has been its cost. At one point, the KidCare expansion was estimated to cost tens of millions of dollars. Representative Gail Harrell recalled the 2010 legislative session when she and Diaz were backing similar KidCare proposals that came with a high price tag.
And we couldn't believe it. But you were able to stand there and fight back. You continued the fight. I just commend you for your persistence, your perseverance, and everything you have done for the children of Florida. It is truly a legacy.
The bill got a major boost early in the session when House Speaker Steve Crisafulli mentioned the issue during his first day address to the chamber.
These children and their parents have followed our laws and should be able to access the same services as many Florida families can. This legislature has acted with similar compassion in recent years and asked for your full support of Chair Diaz's good bill.
And Thursday, it cleared the Florida House on a rare unanimous vote.
Thank you so much for believing in this bill. It's the right thing to do. And with that, I close.
Question now recurs on final passage of CS for House Bill 89. The clerk will unlock the machine and the members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
118 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes.
Those cheers now send the proposal to the Senate, where it's sponsored by Hialeah Republican Rene Garcia. Lawmakers have also included additional funding for KidCare in the budget to cover the program's expansion. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida senators appear ready to approve legislation that would change the state's alimony and custody laws. That story from Regan McCarthy.
The bill is aimed at removing the emotion from what Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell says can be an otherwise very emotional time.
The intent with this is to reduce litigation that inflicts an economic and emotional toll on spouses and their families, allowing all parties to reach the healing stage more quickly, and preserving family assets for their spouses and their children.
Stargell is sponsoring the Senate measure, which she says creates a formula to help judges make alimony award decisions and puts benchmarks in place for when a person can request an alimony modification. The bill also makes a change to the state's custody rules. Stargell says it would create a premise that the best situation for a child is equal time with both parents.
This is getting to the day and age where I think times have changed. And as you probably have friends as well as I, where it's not so much the social stereotypes where the women always stayed home and the men went off to work. But we're moving to a day where both parents can tend to work, or one, a man could stay home and the woman could work. That the court has the ability to take all of those factors into consideration when looking at what is best for the child, but considering walking in the door, both parents will be treated equal.
Sturgill says the word premise, which is used in the bill, is different from the word presumption, which lawmakers had initially discussed. Brandon Senator Tom Lee, who is a strong supporter of the timeshare provision, explains the difference. He says presumption is stronger language, while premise is a little softer.
Slightly softer language that mirrors the equitable distribution of assets statute that's currently, we draw from other places in this chapter of law and use the premise that we soften this 50-50 so that it's no longer 50-50. It says approximately equal, giving the court a little bit more latitude.
And Lee says the provision has plenty of latitude built in, giving judges discretion to stray from the equal timeshare premise whenever it's needed. Some, like Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner, are concerned about another provision in the bill. It would permit a request for an alimony modification if someone's salary is changed by 10%.
Because if I'm making $10 an hour and I get a raise of 10%, which is a dollar, that means then that as the obligee, I'm the person receiving the money, the alimony from the obligor, then he has the right to take me into court for a reduction or modification.
But Sturgill says under current law, modification requests are allowed after what's considered a substantial salary increase. And she says since there's no definition for what's substantial, that leaves the door open for abuse.
I would argue that if a person that you described went into court and said my minimum wage went up 10% and now I get, 80 more cents or whatever that would be, I would hope that a judge would say that's not significant, and we're not going to change your alimony award. Nothing in the bill says that the judge has to change the award. It just says they have the opportunity to go in and ask for a change in alimony.
The Senate measure is awaiting a full floor vote. Meanwhile, a similar measure is expected to come up in the House Friday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing over 1 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition and stewardship of Florida public conservation lands, including watershed and springs protection, gulf restoration, wildlife and fisheries conservation, and more. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.